It is a pleasure to introduce our next instructor based in Johannesburg, South Africa. Jean-Pierre Verster is a portfolio manager at Fairtree Capital in South Africa, where he manages the Protea range of equity long-short hedge funds. Jean-Pierre joined the firm in 2016. Prior to this, he was an analyst at 36ONE Asset Management for 6 years as part of a team that managed the largest hedge fund in the country. Previously, he had been a portfolio manager and analyst at Melville Douglas Investment Management and fulfilled various roles at the Standard Bank Group, including as a credit research analyst in its Global Markets Research Division, a financial manager in the Insurance Services Division, and an internal auditor in the Retail Banking Division. Since 2015, Jean-Pierre is also an independent non-executive director and chairman of the audit committee of Capitec Bank, the second-largest retail bank in South Africa by number of primary clients. He's a chartered accountant and holds the CFA and CAIA designations. Jean-Pierre, on behalf of the MY Global membership community, a very warm welcome to you. Please go ahead.
Thank you, John, and thank you for the opportunity. Yes, greetings from a very warm Johannesburg, South Africa, over 30 degrees Celsius or over 90 degrees Fahrenheit at the moment. So quite nice weather to be talking to you and the rest of the MOI Global community. As you mentioned, I manage the Protea hedge funds, and you can see a picture of the King Protea on the first slide, which is also the national flower of South Africa. So let's get into it. To kick off, just a disclaimer, I manage three regulated funds in South Africa, domiciled here, and this is just a requirement from the regulators. I always kick off my presentations with a slide showing my track record. As a MOI Global instructor, hopefully what I have to share with you is not just of academic value, but of practical value as well. And I can show in terms of following the process of how I invest and how I think about investments, what that has delivered in the past, with the return of the funds done by management of roughly double what the Johannesburg Stock Exchange All Share Index has delivered over the last 7 years or so. So my own process is a combination of qualitative and quantitative factors that I merge together in a quantamental process. It takes me closer to a full Fisher approach or growth at a reasonable price approach rather than a more deep value Benjamin Graham approach. And in this process, I've automated a large part of the number crunching process. So almost like Buffett said, where he doesn't need to know the exact weight of someone to be able to assess if they are overweight or underweight. Similarly, I use a lot of automation in my number crunching part of the analysis, which frees up my time to think more about the qualitative parts of a company and those important qualitative aspects. And I'm not going to go into this slide into much detail. If there are any questions regarding this, you or any other viewers can contact me later to discuss this. So let's kick off. I thought about this proverb, this analogy, when I thought about the idea. That is, give a man a fish and you feed him for a day, but teach a man to fish and you feed him for a lifetime. Now, we will be talking about fish today, but more importantly than just giving you my best idea for 2019 is to talk about a specific concept, a certain way to fish. And that is something that I've been thinking about quite a lot recently, and it has to do with when one buys companies that are above average quality, that compound their intrinsic value at an above average rate for very long, how much should you pay? Should you be willing to pay up? And do you still have a margin of safety if you pay a valuation that might seem like a high PE or price to book ratio, but you compensate for that by having a margin of safety in the fact that the quality of the company gives you a high expected return at a relatively low risk. So the best idea for 2019 is SalMar, a company listed in Oslo, Norway. It's one of the world's largest producers of farmed salmon. It's fully integrated all the way from the small fish eggs to raising the smolts to growing the fish and harvesting the fish, slaughtering the fish, processing and selling as well, and they are highly efficient. It's got a market cap just more than $6 billion at December year end, so we're right on the 2018 year end. The current PE is 18.5 times and about 17 times 1 year forward. And when I started looking for ideas or research the company, I came across a fellow MOI Global member, Robert Leeds, who did a presentation last year on Bakkafrost, which is a company in a similar industry. So I would suggest that if people are interested in this idea, they should also have a look at that presentation of Robert's from last year. Now, here's the provocative bit of the idea. SalMar shares have doubled over the last year. So can it still be a best idea? Is there still value? Should one still buy a share if it has doubled over the last year? So let's kick off. I'm going to start off by looking at the characteristics of the company and the industry in which it operates. And a good place to start is the global salmon industry, but more than that, looking at human consumption of food. Now, the average human eats around 650 kilograms of food each year. Of that, roughly 57 kilograms is meat. And of that meat, roughly 20% is seafood, as you can see from the graph on the right, the red shaded bit. So there is a global tendency, a trend towards people being more affluent, less malnutrition. That means people eat more food, therefore they eat more meat, and they will also eat more seafood. Within that protein mix, one can see that fish proteins is a very small part of the total protein consumption internationally. So when one talks proteins, this is now meat and eggs and other forms of protein. But fish is a very small portion on across all geographies and continents. So there's still significant scope for the demand for fish, and then more particularly salmon, to increase significantly. Fish also has certain health and environmental benefits when compared to other animal proteins, which means that the demand outlook for fish protein and salmon in particular is still quite bright. To show a bit more detail about fish proteins internationally, a large portion of fish these days are farmed rather than caught wild, and that is the same for salmonids. And salmonids actually represent a relatively small part of total fish proteins, with whitefish being 10 times larger than salmonids. So it's just another tailwind if one can think of the prospects of salmon gaining a greater share of fish protein consumption internationally. When comparing salmon to other forms of meat, it is a very efficient form of creating protein. The feed conversion ratio is 1.1, so you almost get as much protein out of the fish as what you put in terms of feed. And that is important because feed represents around 40% of the cost of production. So it is also a type of production that one can see, if the other constraints can be removed, it's a way to increase protein as the global population increases and the demand for protein increases. So that was then a few slides on the demand. Coming to the supply, supply has been growing relatively stable in terms of salmon supply, farmed salmon supply. But the last 4 years, it has stagnated. Wild salmon has stagnated for more than 10 years. So there is a constraint when it comes to the supply of salmon. And that means that prices have been supported from the stagnation in supply over the last 4 years. Looking at the supply then from different countries, Norway represents roughly half of the world's salmon supply, 1.1 million tons of salmon last year. Chile has been growing strongly and now represents roughly a quarter of salmon supply. And other markets like the Faroe Islands, Iceland, the UK are the other quarter. Salmon farming is very temperature sensitive. This is one of the constraints to supply of salmon, and that is that you need sea temperatures of between 8 and 14 degrees and not wild fluctuations above or below that for salmon to be farmed. And that means there are very few places in the world that one can actually farm salmon. If you think about some of the latitudes, it's in the southern hemisphere, places like Chile and New Zealand, and in the northern hemisphere, places like Norway, Iceland, Scotland, and parts of Canada, that one can farm salmon, but you can't do it closer to the equator. Interestingly enough, you can do it a bit further from the equator, and that is where Norway has a natural competitive advantage because of the Gulf Stream. And the Gulf Stream brings a lot of warm water into the northern parts of Norway, which allows salmon fish production quite further north in the case of Norway compared to any other country, which is a competitive advantage for the country of Norway and also a competitive advantage for SalMar, because they have got significant operations in the northern half of Norway. What has this meant for pricing? Well, salmon has always been a more luxurious or premium protein product. It has always traded at a premium to other proteins, except for a portion of time in the early 2000s when lamb was a bit more expensive. But over the last 35 to 40 years, the premium of salmon has been relatively stable compared to other proteins. So even though one can say that salmon is a commodity, the price hasn't fluctuated much. And if you look at salmon relative to some other protein substitutes, it has been able to keep its premium over the last 40 years because of the inherent properties of salmon meat. To the right, you can see a long-term graph of the selling price of salmon, Norwegian salmon, relative to the cost. And from that graph, you can see that the typical fluctuation that you see in commodity markets, not wild fluctuations, and through that fluctuation of selling prices, which is the red line, you can see that the margins are still healthy. In aggregate, the industry has been profitable over the last decade, with a low point in 2012 because of disease. But from that slide, you can see that the profit on an EBIT per kilogram basis has been roughly half a euro to 2 euro per kilogram, which translates to roughly 5 Norwegian crown to 20 Norwegian crown. And if you compare that to the selling price, that means you've got healthy margins of between 5 and 25% in the salmon industry in general. If you look at the pricing on an annual basis, the price does indicate that it is a commodity. In years when there's less supply, you have higher prices, and in years where there's more supply than was anticipated, you have lower prices. But once again, the fluctuations aren't extreme, and salmon has been able to keep its pricing premium, and the price has never, in recent memory at least, dropped to levels below the cost, which means that even though it is a commodity industry, it still has attractive characteristics and allows for low-cost producers to do very well over the long term. And this is a key point. If one has these types of dynamics in a commodity industry, it favors a supplier that has got a consistent, low-cost production. And that is where we can now look at SalMar and compare their characteristics to what, call it, the perfect company would be in an industry like this. So what are we looking for? We are looking for a company that has got scale, and through that scale benefits from fixed cost allocation efficiencies. We're looking for a company that is vertically integrated so that it can control its input costs. We also want preferably a company that is widespread geographically, because in this case we have diseases and other negative implications. implications from concentration. We want high operational standards and innovation or research and development so that the company keeps abreast of the latest technology and keeps costs low. And we want good management that is aligned with shareholders and has a long-term mindset. So looking at scale, SalMar is the second largest salmon farming company in the world after Marine Harvest. They also own 34% of Amolite, which produces salmon in Iceland, as well as a share in Scottish Sea Farms, which produces salmon in Scotland. The total equivalent production for 2017 was 154,000 tons, which is roughly 7% of the global share. And in 2018, the expectation is that it will be 160 tons when they report in the next 2 months. So the point here is that SalMar, as the second biggest player, does have scale. The second characteristic we're looking for is integration, so that there aren't any cost input shocks for the business. Now, SalMar is integrated all the way from genetics to the brood stock, the smolt, which is the small fish that is first raised in fresh water before it is released in saltwater pens, in fjords and other seawater areas which aren't very volatile. The farming, the harvesting and production, and the sales, they're integrated across the whole value chain. They've got a large single processing facility, Innovar, that has allowed them over the last 7 years to increase production capacity without spending too much in terms of CapEx. And they are busy with a second large project now, which will set them up very well for the next decade. And they sell directly to 40 countries in a mix between using the spot market and certain contract sales. And it's always a bit of a art to balance contract sales and sell your product in advance for maybe a bit of a discount to the spot market versus using the spot market but not securing necessarily the volume of sales because of the high risk of selling in the spot market. And they've balanced this very well, where most years roughly half of their sales are on the spot market and the other half on a contract basis. So coming to the footprint of SalMar, they operate in central and northern Norway. And this is quite important because the government in Norway very strictly regulates licenses for salmon. And they recently implemented a traffic light system where they look at where the disease burden and the biological and environmental aspects of these fish farms are average, above average, or below average. And where they are below average, not healthy, too many sea lice, as you can see from the red spots more in the south of Norway, the licenses call for a reduction in salmon production from 1 year to the next, while for the green areas, production is allowed to increase from 1 year to the next. And SalMar is very well positioned with their exposure more to the north of Norway, in being in areas which are much healthier, that has got less occurrence of sea lice and allows them to increase their production of salmon in terms of their licenses. Now, sea lice is a major problem for the whole industry. It can cost up to 10% of revenue to address sea lice. And the government, once again, has regulated that sea lice must be controlled because they gather near these fish farms where there is a lot of salmon and therefore a lot of hosts for the lice. But that impacts wild salmon as well. So to protect the wild salmon, there are very strict regulations in terms of the addressing of sea lice for farm salmon. The government has also developed new licenses, so-called development licenses, to try and enhance the salmon industry, because Norway has got a goal to increase production roughly four times between now and 2050 and get to 5 million tons of salmon production in the next 32 years. So this means that the government is well aligned with the industry to look for a healthy, sustainable way in terms of increasing salmon production from Norway between now and 2050. The fourth characteristic we're looking for a company that would do well in this type of industry is the company that upholds high standards and implements a lot of innovation. If you look at SalMar, their mortality rate for 2017 was below 6%, which is very good. A lot of other salmon companies are above 7% in terms of the proportion of the farmed salmon that that dies before harvesting. They use zero bacterial, so antibiotics, in their farmed salmon process. If you go back 40 years, over 50 tons of antibiotics were used in fish farming. So that's a great innovation from them. Also, to address the sea lice problem, in the last few years, they've made use of cleaner fish, lump fish, that actually eat the sea lice, and is a wonderful way where Mother Nature has given the solution to the problem of sea lice. They've also used vegetable oil and other plant products in the feed over the last few years, as fish oil and other marine inputs to feed has become very expensive. They've been very good in innovating and changing the feed mix to keep the feed cost under control. They are growing their smolt to be larger in the protected environment onshore of freshwater before releasing them to the ocean, which is also a lot of innovation required and leads to a healthier fish. And then the most interesting one more recently is the offshore fish farming development. And they have developed two different concepts and spend a few hundred million Norwegian kroner on their ocean fish farm and their smart fish farm. And this is quite exciting. I haven't put it in the valuation. So it's almost like a free option or a cheap option where they are trying to take the salmon out of the calm waters of the fjords into the rougher waters of the open sea and addressing some of the technological problems you have when you take the salmon out in the more treacherous environment of the open sea. And it's almost like using the skeleton of an oil rig and building a sustained, a self-sustaining fish farm on an oil rig skeleton. And it can be quite exciting if this is successful. They are in the final phases of the first batch of salmon that has been produced by Ocean Farm 1. And if this is successful, it means that the supply of salmon can increase at a higher rate, because it would open up the open seas for fish farming and not just the more placid protected waters of the fjords, which to a large extent has reached capacity now. This effort is led by SalMar's founder, Gustav Witsu. He's still involved, still part of the management team. He founded SalMar in 1991. He's now 65 years old and currently the director of strategic projects. And he founded SalMar when he bought the assets of a liquidated salmon company. So the company has got very strong entrepreneurial roots. He still controls 53% of the company via a intermediate investment company, Kverva. He has restructured that shareholding in terms of making it more tax efficient. So he sold the economic interests to his son, but he maintained the voting interest and therefore maintains control of the entity, even though he has restructured his shareholding for tax reasons. And he has spent the last few years focused on this offshore fish farming project, which makes one optimistic that hopefully that a person of his caliber can be successful in this technological breakthrough of taking salmon back to the open seas. The current president and CEO is Olaf Andreas Ervik. He's 42 years old. He was previously the farming division head. So relatively young, and he's got a very nice runway ahead of him in terms of being CEO. And if you read the annual reports, it's got a very authentic tone, also compared to the other salmon companies out there, where the SalMar tone is no nonsense, telling you what is important and really speaking to you as a co-owner in the business, which gives one comfort that this management team is aligned with Shell's. So what do we have? In SalMar, we have a company that does have scale, is vertically integrated, is widespread geographically to mitigate certain risks, does have high operational standards and continues to invest in innovation and R&D, and has a good management team with a founder that's still involved and still controls the company. And all these characteristics has led to SalMar having sustained EBITDA margins of over 30% per annum, net profit margins of over 20%, and ROEs of above 30% per year, which is not the type of metrics that you would normally associate with a commodity company or a company operating in a commodity industry. But because of their low cost position and their consistent supply and the positive dynamics between supply and demand of the salmon industry, which has led to relatively stable and increasing prices, it has led to these types of metrics. And you can see it in the share price of not only SalMar, but the competitors as well. Over the last 5 years, SalMar's share price is up over 600%. Over the last 8 years or so, it's been a 10-bagger. Aquafrost has also been a 10-bagger. And the others haven't done too badly either. Over the past year, the SalMar shares are up 113%. Over the last 5 years, up 55% per annum. And over the last 10 years, up 38% per annum. So I think hopefully I've shown that this is a great company. The key is the price still reasonable? After the shares have doubled over the course of 2018, can one still see a margin of safety if you buy in at the current price? To help us answer that question, first I'll show some key metrics in the forecasts of what might happen the next 4 years. I grew the tons harvested slightly by roughly 5% per annum and a bit more in the end years as new capacity comes on stream. I've increased the prices also at a low rate between 4 and 5%. If you model that out in the company's financials, that comes to an EBIT per kilogram that still increases a little bit every year, notwithstanding the fact that the costs also increase roughly 5% per annum. And that means that the EBITDA continues to grow. Between 2018 and 2019, there's a bit of a stagnation in the EBIT as the harvested tons are also not much higher. But as the tons increase again, you can see through operational leverage and the benefits of scale, the EBITDA, the EBIT at least, growing quite strongly to almost 5 billion Norwegian krona in 2022. I've excluded fair value adjustments. You would see this from any farming company that has got a cycle of more than a year where you have work in progress. And the same in the salmon farming industry. The whole cycle takes about 2 years from raising a fish to harvesting a fish, which means at the end of every year, you need to revalue your work in progress, the fish that is still in your working capital. And that leads to fluctuations through fair value adjustments in your financials. And most of these fishing companies, and the correct way to analyze them, exclude these from the profits because as they fluctuate over time, you do see the benefits of the increased prices at the point of sale and not just the revaluation that happens in the interim from the working capital of the fish currently under development. In these forecasts, I think they're relatively conservative. The EBIT per kilogram of 2016 is only exceeded in 2021. And note also the interplay between harvested tons and price. As I showed previously, in years where the tons produced is less than anticipated, the price increases more than anticipated and vice versa. So there's a natural interplay between the tons and the price per ton to ensure that there's almost a structural real revenue growth in the salmon industry, which really assists companies to cover their fixed cost base and have operational leverage, positive operational leverage, if you have this dynamic in the revenue line. So in my quantamental process and my automated valuation process, there's a lot of number crunching that happens, but the output is a graph. And a graph for me is just more intuitive to show me visually where we are, how the company has created value in the past, and how it might continue to create value in the future. And in this graph, the gray line is the share price, and the blue and black lines are different ways of valuing the company on an earnings basis, and the shaded areas are balance sheet entries. And basically, what I'm showing here is the gray line was well below the blue and black line historically, which means price was below value historically. In the last year, price has pulled up to be roughly in line with value, but the value of the company, the intrinsic value, according to my analysis, keeps on compounding at a higher than average rate. So even if you buy at the current price, which is call it a full price, I would say that you're paying for the intrinsic value today, but the intrinsic value itself keeps on compounding at an above average rate. Or putting it into more theoretical terms, if you think about the Gordon growth model, the price you're paying today is discounting my 1 year forward free cash flow at my cost of equity minus my growth rate, which is then the formula used to value a annuity, a growing annuity. And we are not at the terminal growth rate of the company yet. The company still has a moat and still is expected to have a return on equity far above its cost of equity. And by growing that moat and generating a value and at a rate much higher than its terminal growth rate, you can see the intrinsic value of the company growing at an above average rate, which justifies buying it even if it is trading at its current value, because that value itself keeps on increasing at a higher average rate. And I contrast that to call it a more deep value approach, where you buy something at a much lower value today. You pay 50 cents in the dollar, but maybe the dollar in a few years' time is worth still a dollar. This is a case of buying a dollar for 90 cents to a dollar, but your dollar might be worth $5 in 5 years' time. So the expectation is, even paying this price, one could enjoy a 15% per annum expected return, with upside from research and development and other efficiencies like the open ocean farming investment that Salman has made. So what can go wrong? There could be an extensive disease outbreak, whether it's sea lice or any other diseases that could negatively impact the harvest of Salmar. There could be regulatory disruption where some of the licenses might be called in or limited for Salmar to keep on farming. There could be technological breakthroughs by competitors. For instance, there's been a lot of development to try and farm salmon in other areas and even onshore in freshwater. Although then it's not salmon, it's trout. And no one has really been able to farm salmon in areas outside of these natural surroundings where the sea temperature is between 8 and 14 degrees Celsius. There could be a costly offshore fish farming failure if they keep on investing in this initiative, but it doesn't work. There could be pressure on the Norwegian salmon price, and I show a graph of that price with the averages of the last 3 years. It has been relatively stable at around 60 Norwegian krona per year over the last 3 years. And I can't really see what would impact the price significantly negatively, but it could always happen. And there could be other management missteps. So these are some of the things that could go wrong that one needs to be cognizant of. So to recap, the best idea, 2019, Salmar, one of the world's largest producers of farmed salmon, which is a great industry with constrained supply dynamics, but very strong and growing demand dynamics. Salmar is a fully integrated, highly efficient, and low-cost operator. The share is liquid, and the company has got scale. It's over $6 billion of market cap. It's at a reasonable valuation of around 18.5 times price to earnings, but it's compounding its intrinsic value at 15 to 20% per annum. And that is why I would say it is still the best idea. So to end, in my view, the most expensive mistake in investing is selling too soon or thinking it is too late to buy a great company compounding intrinsic value at an above average rate for a reasonable price. And that is what this is what we have in this case, I would say. Salmar is a great company. It is compounding its intrinsic value at an above average rate, and it is currently trading at a reasonable value. And that's it. So, John, if you have any questions, I'm happy to take them.
Well, Jean-Pierre, thank you so much for the presentation and such a clearly articulated thesis. I do have a question. I was wondering if you could opine a little bit more on the price increases that they've been able to get and that are still coming going forward on an estimated basis. What's driving that, and at what point do you think that will have to slow down or there will be some substitution effects?
So firstly, their effective price has been below the average spot prices because of the utilization of contract pricing and spot pricing. And they've been quite good the last few years to get closer to the spot price. They do not disclose exactly what their effective price is, but one can, making some assumptions, work out that they're getting much closer to the spot price. So the first opportunity they have is in is less forward sales on the contractual price, which is normally at a discount to the spot price, which would mean that their effective price is closer to the spot price of salmon. The second point is because of this constrained supply of salmon, there's a natural dynamic at play where I can't really see why the salmon price would collapse, because the greatest reason for a collapse in the salmon price would be a glut of supply. And because supply is so constrained, with all the producers effectively being in the same boat, that means there's a low risk of a big collapse in the salmon price. Yes, it does trade at a premium to other proteins, but if you think about the sushi generation and the fact that it is intrinsically a meat that has got a lot of omega-3 acids and fatty acids that are very healthy for human consumption, healthier than a lot of other animal proteins and oils, it means that the intrinsic capabilities and characteristics of salmon meat itself also supports the price. So I think by forecasting a rough 5% increase in the price over the long term is reasonable. And like I say, if I'm wrong on the price, the volume could offset that. That if the price does increase at a lower rate, chances are it's because a company like Salmar has got higher volumes harvested. And if the price shoots up, it could be because of lower tons, but that is compensated then by a higher price. So it's a very interesting self-correcting dynamic one has in the revenue line.
And Jean-Pierre, some time ago I came across some articles contrasting the health benefits of wild versus farmed salmon. Have you read anything to that effect, and do you have any comments on that?
I haven't read anything in depth regarding the two. What I do know is a number of years ago there was concern regarding the use of medicines, antibiotics and other elements in the farming process that wouldn't be used in the wild fishing process, but to a large extent that has been addressed. The second element has been where a lot of people are concerned that farmed fish is being fed more vegetable protein and oil rather than the natural diet of fish protein and oil that the wild salmon would eat. And so far we haven't seen a negative impact of feeding fish more vegetables rather than more fish itself. And also there's been a lot of work in terms of de-stressing farmed salmon, because the sea lice has been a major reason for stress for farmed salmon, which sometimes leads to the fish needing to be pumped into well boats. That's boats with an open hull where the fish are then washed, which is quite traumatic for the fish. And that has also been addressed by using cleaner fish, lumpfish, to on a natural way rather eat the sea lice versus washing the salmon, which leads to stress. So also if you look at the supply of wild salmon, because it has been stagnant for more than a decade, it makes it very difficult for people to substitute farmed salmon with wild salmon. And the wild salmon stock is under pressure. And a lot of governments are trying to persuade and license operators to shift towards farmed salmon, where there might be a slight difference in the quality of the product, but the environmental benefits of sustainable and green fish farming by far outweighs the negative impact of overfishing of wild salmon.
If we could talk a little bit more about capital allocation, is there anything you'd like to see the management team prioritize differently than they're doing at this time?
So historically, the capital allocation has been very good. And I can speak to some examples where they made acquisitions over the years in areas like in northern Norway, where they saw over the long term, there's a natural benefit to operating in northern Norway. So that has been a good allocation of capital towards the geographical areas that are better for salmon fish farming. Secondly, if you think about the large processing facility they built roughly 7 or 8 years ago, which is Innovar, they built that to be world-class and to give them capacity to roughly now to 2018, 2019. And that is why they are busy now with a next big CapEx project to create their latest production facility. So they haven't spent too much ahead of production, and they also haven't been behind the curve in terms of production. So that speaks to very good capital allocation. And then also spending quite significant amounts on R&D, on innovation, on the open ocean fish farming initiative, shows that this is the company that not just looks at the bottom line in terms of maximizing profits year to year, but also over the long term wants to make sure that the company sustainably can increase their production by looking at spending CapEx on new initiatives. So everything in the past has shown that they've got a very good capital allocation framework. So the only thing I would want from management is they continue in this way. And so far, all the signs are that they are continuing to allocate capital very well as they have done in the past.
What risk would you say is top of mind for you with regard to the long-term thesis here?
I would say two things, call it a known risk and a bit of a more unknown or unquantifiable risk. The known risk for me is sea lice. It is so costly to negate the negative impacts of sea lice that you have seen in the south of Norway significant outbreaks which have had very negative impact on salmon fishing in the southern parts of Norway. And one wouldn't want to see that spread towards central and northern Norway. So a lot of effort needs to be put on limiting the spread of sea lice, and that is a critical risk to be mitigated. The second one, which is a bit more unknown, is technological advancement from competitors. I think a risk to the world supply of salmon in terms of increasing supply significantly, which could put pressure on the price of salmon, is if you have technological breakthroughs where salmon can be farmed onshore in protected environments, possibly very safe freshwater environments. And there have been no technological breakthroughs to date. But if tomorrow some company in China finds a way to farm salmon onshore in China, very close to a lot of the markets where the salmon is consumed, saves costs on transport, that could be a risk to your more traditional players like SalMar who farm fish in the sea. It's very difficult to quantify that, but that is a curveball that could happen where you have technological breakthrough that doesn't benefit the whole industry, but benefits certain new entrants to the detriment of the traditional players like SalMar. They call it a low probability but high impact risk.
Wonderful. Well, I'll leave it there. Jean-Pierre, I would just like to encourage our members to feel free to follow up with you directly with their own thoughts and questions. Thank you very much for showing your email address here on the screen. And once again, thank you so much for taking the time to be with us today and share your insights with our community.
Thank you, John. Appreciate the opportunity. Thanks.
Goodbye for now.